We've had a lot of newcomers to our congregation in the past few months. And I was thinking that, and many of them asked me about what we believe about God and if it's okay if they're atheist. And so I thought that rather than a quick welcome hall answer, I would preach a sermon about various aspects of God. And I scheduled that sermon for April 9th. Then when I was writing my Unigram descriptions, I put in there, you might want to go online and listen to my sermon from 2015 called Why I Am Not an Atheist, because I'm going to be drawing on some of those themes in my sermon on April 9th. And then I got a call that the minister who was preaching on April 2nd broke her shoulder. Reverend Beth Banks from the UU Church of Davis seriously injured her shoulder, needs to have a complete shoulder reconstruction, will be out of commission for several months, including this Sunday, right now. And I thought, instead of asking you to go online and listen to that sermon I preached in 2015, I would offer it to you this morning as preparation for further thoughts next Sunday when the title of the sermon is God is a Verb. This is actually a bit of a spiritual autobiography for me, but I hope that you'll see some of your own process in what I share with you today. And Jim is going to help me out by reading some definitions as we go along. There will be a test later on, so you might want to take notes. So, and then Jim and I have agreed that I'm going to let him know when he should read by looking at him. So we're going to test it right now. Here we go.
Theism. Belief in the existence of a god or gods, especially belief in one God as creator of the universe, intervening in it and sustaining a personal relation to his creatures.
So that God that intervenes and sustains a personal relationship with his creatures, that God and I didn't get off to a very good start when I was young. My parents were religiously conflicted and drove me to the local Baptist church every Sunday and picked me up afterwards. Strict Baptist church. So this is what I learned from being in that church, that this God thought I was a sinner and had to send his son to die so to save me, and that if I didn't agree with that program, I was going to go to hell. So my little 7, 8, 9-year-old mind, not sure the age, said, why would I want to have anything to do with a God like that? There was no evidence that I could benefit. And the hell thing, it didn't really put the fear of God in me, shall we say. And I didn't have anybody to ask my questions. It was clear the Sunday school teacher who wanted me to color pictures of Jesus as a shepherd didn't want me to ask questions. And it was clear that my parents, who didn't even bother to go to church with me, didn't want me to ask questions. So I thought that it wasn't for me. I didn't have examples of other religions. I just knew that this was the choice presented, I couldn't accept it, and I was out. One Sunday that stands out in my mind really profoundly was the Sunday they had an altar call, and people were coming forward crying and being held in the community, and I wanted that. I wanted to be held by the community. I wanted to be seen and connected, and yet I couldn't do it. And they would cry when they'd come forward, and I cried on the way home in the car with my father, who was trying to figure out why I was so upset. I was so upset because I thought that I was shut off from religion for the rest of my life.
Agnostic. A person who believes that nothing is known or can be known of the existence or nature of God or of anything beyond material phenomena. A person who claims neither faith nor disbelief in God.
My father actually did have a religion. He was a fundamentalist agnostic. So my father believes, he's still going to be 92 this year, still believes that there is no way that you can know whether there is a God or not. And if you believe there's a God, you're wrong. So after I stopped going to the Baptist church because my parents stopped driving me there, I had this period of time where I was not engaged in religion at all. Again, I thought it was Christian or nothing, and I had no other examples that was presented to me. I was one of those nuns, N-O-N-E-S's, that they talk about. Never thought about going to church, never wanted to go to church, had no religious connections in my life at all. But I was a scarred nun. I wasn't a nun who'd never been to church. I was a nun who felt shut out from options because I didn't believe in the God that was presented to me. Now, I did lots of singing in churches because I've been a singer most of my life, and I flirted briefly with Mormonism because there was this really cute Mormon boy that I was really into. But that clearly was not enough of a motivation. But interestingly enough, when I was about 10, I had a good friend in my neighborhood who was a Unitarian Universalist and took me to her church, maybe once, maybe twice. I have no idea. But somehow it embedded itself in my unconscious, this trip to a UU church, because even though I don't remember anything about that visit, in my 20s, when I moved around a lot, maybe 5 places living in 10 years, I went to every single UU church in each new town, and I stood out there and looked at it, but I never went in. Now, you know, why didn't you go in? What if I was wrong? What if it wasn't a place? What if it meant closing the... What if the UUs weren't going to be a place where I felt safe? Then I would have to close the door forever on something that clearly, unconsciously, I felt a need for. And then in January of 1989, I moved to Sacramento. I didn't know a single person. I was at a real new start in my life in a lot of ways, and I thought, okay, if I'm going to do this UU thing, I'm going to do it now. And so I walked through that door. It was a little different then in 1989. The space was very different. But I walked through that door, and I saw the blank banner. And I can't tell you, I still get emotional about it. I thought, oh my gosh. You know, oh, there's Christianity, there's Islam, there's Confucian, and there's one that says, there's still room. We still think that there's things to learn, and there's ideas about divinity and ideas about spirit. Kind of like your ideas here is what that banner said to me. You know, what was I looking for when I came on that day? It's a question that we ask people at our newcomer orientation. What brought you to church? And I always say, not a bus or a car or a bike, but what brought you to church? And it's a tough question to answer. What are you looking for? But I know that when I came here, whatever I was looking for, I found it here because I have never left.
Earth-based spiritualities. Earth-centered religion or nature worship is a system of religion based on the veneration of natural phenomena. It includes any religion that worships the earth, nature, or fertility gods and goddesses, such as the various forms of goddess worship or matriarchal religion.
So I found my community here at UU, but I was still seeking. And I think I was seeking to find a way to relate to a divine energy. And it was goddess spirituality that really opened it up for me. In the late 80s and for most of the 90s, this congregation started out with a very small group of subversive women gathering to worship the goddess and grew into a large group of women's spirituality circles that were a big part of this congregation for more than a decade. And I was part of that first small group. It felt like another homecoming in a way, this idea that God or the divine spirit could be feminine. It was a revelation for me. I'd never had that idea presented to me before, and it opened my mind to seeing qualities of love and courage and inspirational ideas about goddesses and mythologies that opened my spirit in new ways. Some people ask, well, do you believe in those goddesses? It's It's not a matter of belief. It was a matter of a quality that you find in a divine spirit. To say that there's a goddess of love and compassion means there's love and compassion in the world, and it is embodied in the spirit of that goddess. This was an idea about God and divinity that was very powerful for me. I loved the rituals that we did and still do. I loved being with older women who were expressing themselves in creative ways. And I loved the connection to the earth cycles and the cycles of the sun and the earth. And it's been a part of my ongoing spirituality ever since.
Humanistic religious naturalism, an integration of two forms of thought. First, religious humanism, which is a humanist ethical philosophy explored through religious rituals and beliefs that center on human needs, interests, and abilities. And second, religious naturalism that focuses on the religious attributes, of the universe or nature, the understanding of it, and our response to it.
Religious humanism. It's an ethical philosophy explored through religious rituals and beliefs. In some ways, that's the common denominator of who we are as Unitarian Universalists. We have a great spectrum of beliefs about God and the nature of divinity, but when we gather, we are basically religious humanists. And in my burgeoning connection to these ideas of God and these images of the divine, I wanted something deeper. I wanted a deeper theology. I didn't know what it was, but I wanted something deeper. And I found it through Buddhism. A friend in the early 90s invited me to the Zen Center in Marin at Green Gulch Farm. And it brought Buddha into my mix, my stew. Now, of course, Buddha is not a god. Buddha himself said that. In fact, Buddha was a religious humanist. He was an agnostic humanist because the teachings of the Buddha are to not concern yourself with what God means or whether there's a god or not. Concern yourself with how you live your life and how you interact with others in this life. But the really compelling aspect of Buddhism for me was the connection with the seventh principle of Unitarian Universalism, respect for the interdependent web of which we are a part. I had understood the web from my pagan connections to the connections to the earth and our web with nature and with the earth, but Buddhism helped expand that idea for me to this sense of dependent co-arising, the idea that we are creating this web together by the way we interact with each other, by the way we treat each other, by the way we interact with the world. And in a way, that web is a form of God itself, that we are all co-creating. This helped me to see how I could fit, that God wasn't up there anymore, that maybe it was okay to turn that God into a female and I could connect. This was an idea of divinity that was within this web that enclosed all of us. It filled me with this sense of connection and mutual responsibility with all beings. And it really helped me eliminate my idea about a hierarchical sense of God. God was above, God was outside, God was at the top of the org chart. This interdependent web of all existence. It's become an organizing sense of my life and the grounding of my ministry.
Pantheism, a belief that the universe is identical with divinity, or that everything composes an all-encompassing, immanent God. Pantheists thus do not believe in a distinct personal or anthropomorphic God. As compared with panentheism, a belief system which posits that the divine interpenetrates every part of the universe and extends timelessly beyond it. Unlike pantheism, which holds that the divine and the universe are identical, Panentheism maintains a distinction between the divine and non-divine and the significance of both.
Uh-oh, I hope you were taking notes. It's getting complicated. So it distills down to a question that I'm still pondering in my rational mind. We have this interconnected web of all existence. Is that, for lack of a better term, God? Is it all of us, the universe all contained in one, co-creating, mingling, making it happen together? Or is there a power that is separate? Is there a power that operates independent of this interdependent web? When I was pondering these questions in seminary, I came across the work of James Luther Adams, a 20th century Unitarian theologian. And he had this concept of the divine initiative. It comes out of process theology. The divine initiative, like grace or inspiration, it's the idea that there's a divine power that lures us towards the good, lures us and calls us. He said that this is a response not to just to other humans and individuals, but a response to a transcending, redemptive, transformative power. Spirit of life, come unto me. Another process theologian, Catherine Keller, takes this divine initiative and creates two aspects to it. This idea of a power that influences us outside of our interconnectedness. She refers to two forms of this divine energy, one of them being Eros, that love and encouragement towards creativity, sexuality, energy, spirit, and agape. Agape is that divine love that holds us, the love that Jesus of Nazareth talked about, the love of for each other in that sense of connection and community that holds us and holds us all in this interdependent web.
Earth-based religiously agnostic pantheism, a term created by a certain Reverend Lucy Bunch of Sacramento, California, to make the point that it is not necessarily useful spending your time trying to find the perfect label for your beliefs, but rather to enjoy the discovery and find meaning in the journey.
So my journey, rejecting that theistic idea of a God that controls things for us, opening my heart to the idea of the feminine power of the divine, recognizing our interconnectedness through Buddhist teachings, and then pondering, is this web all of what we consider divine, or is there a force in the universe that can influence us? So I've decided I'm an agnostic pantheist. I believe that we are all part of this great web of existence, that we are deeply interconnected with each other and with all beings and with the earth. But I'm not sure if there's something else, something that could be considered a divine power that influences us, challenges us, and holds us and sustains us. And I'm not sure whether it matters if I figure that out or not. It's my head that's agnostic, but it's my soul and my heart and my spirit that knows that it's not about the question. It knows it's about breathing in that spirit, breathing out that love and connection. I know that I crave mystery, that I want to be filled with spirit. I want to be held in that transformative, redemptive power that James Luther Adams talked about. And I want that power to fuel my life and fuel my ministry. Years ago, my father, when I was contemplating going to seminary, my father said, "What is it that these UUs believe anyway?" And so I was eager to explain, contemplating seminary, challenging my own thinking. I went on and on and on about what I thought about God, what I thought about death, what I thought about life, on and on and on, probably more than he really wanted to hear from me. But as I continued to tell this story, his face got more and more incredulous. And he said, "Where did you get that?" I get that. That's what UUs do. We explore. We deepen our lives. We ask these questions. It's my free and responsible search for truth and meaning. This is what we do in a community of seekers, in a community of people that has a blank banner on their wall." And my father looked at me. He said, "You can't do that." "Yes, I can, Daddy. Yes, I can do that. And you can too. You can find your own way. You can build your own theology. And this congregation and the UU community can be your support and encouragement. It is the journey and not the destination that is important. I am still searching. But it's a glorious search among some of my favorite people in the world. And I hope that I will always be searching. I hope that you teach me things that enrich me and advance my thinking and help me to build even deeper connections as time goes on. Unitarian Universalism is not a rock to cling to. It is a river to swim in. Will you swim with me?"